So, Bob, I thought we would read some patron emails and just respond. And since you're a therapist, I curated the emails specifically for you because I knew you would have some excellent things to say. No expectations.
Yeah, no pressure.
This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a professor and a therapist.
Hi, my name is Bob Gettle. I'm a therapist in practice here in Seattle and a classmate of Kirk's, Ray Beckwin, when we were in graduate school.
Yeah, in the mid-90s, we were both going to graduate school together, and we became friends, and we'd hang out after class and talk shit about our professors. This is an email from patron Reed. Do non-therapists listen to Psychology in Seattle? I stumbled across your podcast looking for something both thought-provoking and educational for my daily commute. Respectfully, there are a lot of talking heads out there more interested in defending ideas than exploring them. I admire the fact that you and your guests tackle complicated ideas yet find a way to do it with unfiltered humor and a scientific basis. I feel like I always learn something about people and have a good laugh doing it. I like the fact that even though your guests are often not specialists in these topics, although you are, Bob, they add a practical perspective on things. Thanks for doing this and keep up the great work. On a serious note, most of us know friends and family struggling with mental health issues. Some are not even aware of it. Sometimes these people can be extremely difficult to support, and the lack of public education and availability to services is a huge gap in the U.S. today. We need to remove the stigma and fear of mental health needs and make treatment more accessible. I'm convinced we have a high number of people in our prison system, homeless on our streets, and being expelled from our schools whose lives could be very different given proper treatment and care. It starts with education. Hopefully, the work you are doing here will help drive that change. Bob, any thoughts on that?
Oh, wow. Now I'm supposed to be on profound, huh? And say something clever and interesting.
Yes. You're a therapist, so you're supposed to actually have awesome things to say.
I agree. There's a stigma about mental health treatment and mental illness. And myself as a client in therapy for probably 24 years, I'm kind of in a weird spot because I don't really feel much stigma. I talk about it all the time. I'm not embarrassed about my participation in therapy, some of which I found very helpful, some of it not so. But what I mean to say is that I don't have the perspective that someone else might have about this because I'm immersed in this world.
Not only have you been in therapy, but you're also a therapist. Yeah. You also advocate for the reduction of stigma in our society,
oh, yeah.
I guess. And we live in Seattle, which is, you know, liberal central and also therapy central.
Yeah.
And we are a small, tiny little pocket in a vast sea of stigma.
Right. Another thought I have about all that, though, is for some populations, the treatments that we have are insufficient to the task. And we don't have treatments that engage people properly, make them want to go, want to get help. I'm thinking of some serious chronic mental illness issues that probably affect homelessness, not just addiction, but things like psychotic disorders or mood disorders, wherein we don't have ways of engaging those folks in treatment that work for everybody.
Right. We typically will say, let's make an appointment at this time next week, and you will come to my office, we will talk, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Many people either don't have a lifestyle that's set up to do that, or it's extremely difficult. They have to take four buses, and or they have other stuff they have to do, like survive in life. So, and there's certainly a lot of treatment programs out there that are non-traditional that will, actually go to the people and this sort of thing, but it's really rare.
Yeah, I'd say rare.
Yeah. And the perhaps way that we even conduct therapy with them in general is not conducive to their needs. Mm. We, the way that we offer therapy is actually quite specific to a particular, and it's tailored to a particular cultural group, and it doesn't always work for people.
Right.
One cultural group it doesn't particularly work for is men. It's, traditionally masculine men, men who are socialized to be traditionally masculine, to sit down in a room and, knees together, almost touching and talking about your feelings with a box of tissue next to you, eye contact and all that kind of stuff is what traditionally masculine socialized men are taught to avoid, like the plague, yeah. not just something they don't like, but actually if they do this, it means that they're a woman or that they're gay, which they've been told from day one is the worst possible thing you could ever be called. You know, what do men call each other when they want to insult someone? They call them a pussy or yeah. a wuss yeah. or a girl.
Right.
When people go golfing, for instance, and you don't hit the putt far enough, you call them a Sally, right? right? You know, it's funny. It's like if a woman were to hit the putt a little too hard, you know, and they called you a Grant or something, you know, it's like, that's not an insult. It's like, oh, what a Grant. You hit that putt too hard. But somehow calling a guy a Sally because right. he didn't hit the putt too hard, hard enough is like the supreme insult. Right. And anyway, so therapy is part of the problem, and the stigma, right. you know, comes from that. And also, I want to throw something out to you, Bob. Long time ago, I started to realize, and I've only, you know, and more and more as time goes on, I've realized that the people that bother me in the world, particularly random people, randos, if you will, are often people suffering, not necessarily from mental illness, but maybe from mental illness, but some kind of personality issue that has justification, you know, like they were abused as children or something.
Right.
For instance, I'll never forget, this is sort of it's a very seminal moment on this path of wisdom for me was, I don't know, it was probably like 15 years ago. I was getting off of the bus. I rarely ride the bus. I've probably been on the bus. Seattle has an extensive bus system. I've been on the bus probably 3 times in my life. It's really disgraceful, and it's usually because someone else is like, let's take the bus, and I'm like, nah, no, like, come on, okay. So this is one of those times, and I was walking off the bus, and the bus driver just, for no reason at all, just started screaming at me, and I can't remember exactly what the bus driver, what she said. But I remember just being incensed about it, you know? And I turned around and I exchanged words with her, and I just thought, like, what? You know, there wasn't even like a conflict going into it. It wasn't like I had an interaction with her, like, hey, give me my change. It was just, it was just completely out of the blue. And she was reacting to something I did. And I remember just thinking, like, what? And it was so extreme that in a flash, I went from how dare that woman to this perspective of, oh, if she were one of my clients and she were sitting on my couch and she were telling me about how she was abused as a child and how sometimes riders will trigger her and cause her to say things that she regrets terribly afterwards, I would be thinking in my head, wow, there are probably some people in the world who are going home that are quite angry at you and are very confused about why you're reacting that way. But I, as your therapist, am getting this behind the scenes conceptualization of your personality and your reactivity. And I know why you do those things. It makes total sense given what you've been through and the way your psychology is and that kind of thing. And so in that moment, I just remember thinking, I just had this light bulb go off above, not a real light bulb, Bob. I know sometimes you take things really literally and there's not a light bulb above my head. A figurative light bulb goes off above my head. And I was like, wait a second, if she were my client, I would know why this is happening. And it's not just that, but it's this philosophical paradigm shift of when people are weird and bothersome, it often, if not always, has a very justifiable reason behind it that if you just knew the person better, you would understand it. It doesn't justify it per se, but it... Because the way I was seeing it before, which is the way maybe I was taught to see situations like that, was people like that are just assholes. They're just bad people with bad judgments, or they're meanies. You know, they're bullies. They're the blonde guy in Karate Kid. You know, they're just evil, and they need to be put down. They need to be like fought against or something. not that there's a human being behind that aggression or behind that mean behavior or unfair behavior. Does that make sense to you, Bob?
Absolutely makes sense. I think what you're talking about is, and I don't mean this word as any kind of criticism, a failure in empathy. Mm-hmm. I think for most of us, what we don't do, what we can't do so easily, and maybe it's easier to do when you're actually providing therapy to somebody, because it's like you said, you're in a certain mindset, you're in a certain position, and so your focus is going to be tailored to your client's well-being, whereas when you're out running your life, your focus is not that at all. But in any case, what we fail to see so much of the time is the me and you, because every moment anybody ever had, I've already had. And if I can look, and sometimes I can't, but if I can see, I can probably see me in somebody who behaves in this way.
When you're in the wild and someone's an asshole on the street, do you have that viewpoint of seeing them as not just a meanie that we should judge, but someone who is likely suffering?
I'd say I have fear. I definitely get fear. Yeah, I try pretty hard to, God, this sounds a little goody-two-shoes, see how a thing might be, how a person might behave in the way that they are. I certainly wouldn't put myself in harm's way to do it. It's reasonable to protect ourselves. But if somebody's behaving strangely, yeah, I'll probably think, what's the possibility?
Because you've seen the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And also, when you're with clients, do you ever think, boy, you're probably bothering a lot of people with that attitude and that reactivity?
Occasionally, I have had thoughts like that, yeah. And it's probably actually accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just completely blows my mind, you know? It's like, wait, everyone who is being a jerk in the world has this rich backstory that makes total sense as to why they're being a big jerk.
Right.
And if we all just knew that backstory, we would be more compassionate and have more empathy for people and take things less seriously, less personally. You know, when that bus driver did that, my first knee-jerk reaction was to take it personally. And then my next reaction was, wait a second, this probably has nothing to do with me. I've triggered something. God knows what it was. And that's on her, you know what I mean? And you know, she'll likely regret it, because people come into therapy and they say, you won't believe what I did the other day. Sure. And I can't believe I did that.
Right.
Or at least hopefully they have, you know, remorse about it. All right. Well, any other thoughts on that, Bob? Probably not, I'm guessing.
Probably not.
Yeah. Well, that does it for an episode, a very short episode. I want to do a number of short episodes over this month. I want to experiment with doing more frequent but shorter episodes. So that does it for this episode of Psychology in Seattle. The dog is barking. The dog is barking. Please take care of yourself, because you deserve it.